Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In-play radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Week 10 in the National Football League. Dave Kellner here alongside Gil Alexander, the Beating the Book a mega pod host, to look ahead to week number 10. Good to have you with us, folks. Four live games televised this weekend, and we will start with the International Series match in just a few moments' time. But first of all, it's a warm welcome to Gil Alexander. How are you doing, Gil?
Dave, experts from across the pond. I'm surprised you let me back on the show after the last week or so.
Yeah, it was another rough week, Gil, from a betting standpoint. But class is permanent, form only temporary, Gil, and I'm sticking with that.
Well, I mean, I hope folks haven't shown up in the last few weeks. At least there's some history before that to suggest otherwise. But good Lord, what a stretch!
It was a brutal week last week, Gil. And does that ever affect you from a betting standpoint when you're laying your cash down over there? Do you ever think, wow, that was too bad to be true? How am I ever going to cope next week? Or is it just a case of getting straight back on the horse?
Yeah, I mean, the latter for me. You know, I'm a baseball bettor. I had a spectacular baseball season, and I'm a football bettor. And I'm good at sort of not going crazy on any given week, and I have had a great 2014. And even football, listen, the first 6 weeks, I was spectacular. And then all of a sudden, the gambling gods told me to back down and know my place. And so, yeah, no, but it's all tempered because, no one was doubling up or tripling up or doing something crazy. Mm. So we're okay.
Let's get stuck into this week, Gil. We've got four live matches once again this week, and it's the last of the season's International Series matches at Wembley. And it's the Dallas Cowboys at the Jacksonville Jaguars, Sunday 6 p.m. And we haven't got a line for this at the moment, Gil, because Tony Romo's participation at quarterback for the Cowboys still questionable. It sounds like he's going to start on Sunday afternoon, Gil.
Yeah, the latest is that, he's practiced 2 days in a row, and that, if someone practices, the theory in the NFL is if you practice, you play. Mm. And I think it's pure madness, quite frankly, that they would put Tony Romo. I mean, he's got broken vertebrae in his back, which I don't know if you go and even broadcast with two vertebrae in your back, Dave. I think you stay home when you have two broken vertebrae. But he wants to play an NFL football game. For the Cowboys, it's interesting. They're 6-3. Of course, most folks are familiar with their history. They were 8-8 last year, 8-8 the year before, 8-8 the year before that. And really, since the beginning of 1997, they are exactly a .500 football team. So as soon as they went 6-1 and they dropped their last two games to go to 6-3, there seems to be this underlying panic that the magnet of 8-8 is rearing its head again. Mm-hmm. And that may or may not be true, but this is the one game where schedule moving forward, they know they can win this game against the Jaguars. It gets really tough for Dallas after this. So they're really, maybe that's their thinking. Maybe they're like, well, it's Jacksonville. We better get the win here. Let's play Romo. I wouldn't if I were them.
And while we're talking about this International Series match, it's worth noting that the 2005 matches have been announced as well. The Dolphins back in town. They host the Jets in week 4. That's on Sunday, October the 4th next year. Gil, you're inflicting the Jacksonville Jaguars onto us again. Taking on the Buffalo Bills in week number 7. And the Chiefs at home against the Lions in week 8 on November the 1st. So those are next year's fixtures. And the Jags back again, Gil. It's not fair, Gil.
Well,
can't we have the Patriots or the Colts?
We here's the thing. Let's talk about the silver lining of this. The silver lining is I came on your show about 5-6 weeks ago, and you asked me, will you guys have a team in London? And I said to you, almost like I was cheating on my own show, I said, listen, if I said this on my show, they'd laugh at me. Because I don't think the average U.S. fan understands that there will be a team in London. It will happen. And a gentleman by the name of David Perdoom, who works at ESPN.com, who comes on my show very generously from time to time, he reports that, you know, over at Will Hill, you guys, you know, the largest sports book in the UK, you've slashed the odds from 6-1 to 3-1 as to whether an NFL franchise will come to London by 2020, and that's after your Treasury Chief George Osborne told the media that the government wants an NFL team based in London and will do whatever it can to make it happen. And it's going to happen. Roger Goodell is hell-bent. But to your Jacksonville point, you know, Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, he says, oh, so in his southern drawl, he says, oh, it's a wonderful thing. It's cachet for a team to be in London. And then they turn around like, well, will you give up a home game to play in London? He goes, absolutely not. So these guys are a little sort of saying one thing and acting another way. But, you know, it'll happen, and you'll get better teams than the Jaguars once that does happen. I promise you that. Until then, a heavy dose of the Jaguars, my friend.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that. Interesting that you mentioned that quote from Jerry Jones as well, because those fixtures there, those three fixtures, suggest to me, as I'm sure it does to you, that the bigger teams at the moment don't want to sacrifice that home fixture, Gil. That's why they aren't attracted by the prospect of coming to Wembley and seeing London.
Yeah, because the revenue that they generate from those home games is such that that is a big loss for them. In the case of the Jaguars, there is no such big revenue. Those are, you know, they have zero home field advantage, if you will, in Jacksonville. You know, from a betting standpoint, though, if that's any barometer, you know, giving up home games aside now, Perdoom also reports, though, that this last game between the Lions and Falcons, betting up 400% from the previous game in London between the Raiders and Dolphins earlier this season. Now, putting that in perspective, you know, it's still that Lions-Falcons, while 400% of a bigger handle than the Raiders-Dolphins, it's still about roughly a quarter, Perdoom reports, of your Sunday match between Manchester United and Chelsea. Mm. So, you know, it has its place, I guess, in your sports culture. No one's saying it's ever going to, you know, rival that, but that's not insignificant, you know. So the interest is there, but yes, you know, these NFL teams are going to have to be incentivized. They say with the Cowboys, the way to get them to give up a home game is to say, we'll give you another Super Bowl if you do that. It's so funny, the things that are being tossed around behind the scenes, or not so behind the scenes, as it were, this time.
Maybe they take a winning record, Gil, given what you've said about them finishing 8-8 in recent history. What about this matchup then, Gil? We haven't got a line at the moment, and it sounds as if Tony Romo is going to participate on Sunday. They need him, all, in all honesty. Obviously not for this game, but Brandon Whedon didn't perform last week against Arizona. They've usually had a more established backup at quarterback behind Romo as well, haven't they? And they'll be looking at what Kyle Orton's doing in Buffalo at the moment and questioning the decision to release him. But from what I've read, Gil, he wasn't exactly bought into the Cowboys and their training regime in the prelude to this NFL season.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is there, but you know, Brandon Whedon, it's not as if he doesn't have some experience as an NFL starter. You know, he was really entrenched in Cleveland as a starter. He was a guy who came out of college at a older age. Typically, American college students graduate at the age of 21 or 22. Well, Brandon Whedon was in, you know, past his mid-20s already. I believe he was 26 or 27. So he was sort of a guy who had a character of getting in the NFL that folks thought would translate well. He certainly had a great college career at his age, and just hasn't really panned out in the NFL. When I observed him playing against the Redskins a couple years ago, he seemed to just not be able to detect linebackers, which is a big problem. And he certainly wasn't any good last week with his first start. Again, it's one thing coming off the bench mid-game when teams don't have time to prepare for you, as he did 2 weeks ago and looks pretty good in that primetime game, but not good at all. Really horrific passer rating last week in the Cowboys game against, I believe it was Arizona last week, if memory serves.
It was, yes.
Yeah, and so now at Jacksonville, you know, with Romo at quarterback, it's probably a 7-point spread. It would be much more, obviously, if it was in Dallas. It would probably be, you know, hard to say if it would be more or less if it were in Jacksonville. The travel to London is always sort of squirrely with lines. If it's not Romo, that line would come down on game day. Let's say we get a report early, oh, it's going to be Brandon Whedon, you know, throw a curveball. That line could come down as much as 3 or 4 points, you know, down to a field goal. It'll be rapid-fire betting on the Jaguars in that case. But it's probably about a touchdown spread, and it's justified. You know, Dallas still has that great running game. They've got the best third-down percentage conversion rate in the NFL, and a lot of that has to do with that running game. If you have third and short situations, you're going to convert more of them. Or even if it's third and long, if Romo's only got to focus on those plays and they've got to be worried about the run still, you know, it helps that the pressure's off him. So it's justified. There's nothing really great to say about the Jaguars other than to say they're a young team who's, you know, improving slowly, but the Cowboys are established and they ought to be a 7-point favorite here.
What do you make of Blake Bortles at quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Difficult to assess, I suppose, so far because he's not made many starts in the NFL, but 13 interceptions this season, which doesn't offer that much encouragement.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the first thing. It's tough to assess. Rookie quarterbacks are rookie quarterbacks. It's very rare that you have one come in and set the league on fire. You know, Dan Marino of the Dolphins in the 1980s was the greatest example of a player who just came in and was phenomenal from the beginning. That's, you know, 30 years ago. There's examples since, but they're few and far between. Robert Griffin and Andrew Luck being the most recent examples of rookie quarterbacks who were just phenomenal in their first year. But Bortles is much like most of them. I really do think he's going to be a great quarterback. I mean, let's hold back on great. I really do think he'll be a very good, serviceable NFL quarterback. But as you point out, not only 13 picks, here's the real problem with those 13 picks. Four of them were returned for touchdowns. And while folks will say, well, that's not his fault that they were returned for touchdowns, yeah, but it kind of has a net effect that you can't really quantify where you're like, yeah, we probably should take him out of the game since we're getting crushed here. So he's got to ratchet back the interceptions for sure. That'll get anybody benched no matter the potential.
Yeah, one of my friends called him a pick six machine, which isn't a good quality in the NFL, unfortunately.
No, not what you want to be nicknamed. Not at all.
Let's have a look at the 9:25 p.m. start time on the Sunday. Then this one televised as well. The New York Giants at the Seattle Seahawks. The Giants 13-4. The Seahawks 2-9 on the money line, and the Seahawks -9 points here, 10-11. The Giants +9 at 10-11. First of all, Gil, has that line moved at all in Las Vegas?
Not significantly so. There's been a little bounce up and down. You know, opened at 9. You might have seen a 9.5 at one point, as you pointed. It's sort of, now you're seeing an 8 here and there. So, yes, movement, but between the numbers 7 and 10, that movement doesn't really mean much. So, movement, yes, but not really significant movement.
The aura of invincibility appears to have gone with the Seahawks at the moment. They had that at the start of the season. It does look to have dissipated as the NFL season has moved on. And the Oakland Raiders pushed them at CenturyLink last week. As is often the case, the turnovers in that game proved crucial in the end, Gil, and the Seahawks won by 6. The Giants come into this on the back of 3 straight losses, but not only that, 3 straight losses against the spread as well. And Andrew Luck went to town on the secondary last week. They're 3-0, the Giants, against Houston, Washington and Atlanta. 0-5 against Detroit, Arizona, Philadelphia, Dallas and Indy. That's significant, isn't it, Gil? This is a team that aren't dining at the top table right now, the Giants.
Well, it's a great point and one I wish I had made on my own show, Dave. So perhaps we should consult before I do my own show, because that's a great stat right there. It's very true. The Giants look very ordinary against good competition and, you know, sort of flex their muscles against poor competition. And Seattle, regardless of their quote-unquote, and we'll put it in quotes, problems this year, because when you look up, by the way, they're still 5-3. Isn't that funny? You know, we tend to think of Seattle as this diminished team, yet they're still 5-3.
Yep.
Seattle is obviously in the category of being a formidable opponent, and the Giants have to fly cross-country to Seattle, and we're now at the time of year where weather can be an issue in Seattle. It is the loudest stadium in the NFL. Fans of the New Orleans Saints might argue with me, but I've been to Seattle. It's ridiculous. You can't hear the person next to you. And the Giants, you know, football is very simple. It's blocking and tackling, and it's can you establish the run and can you play defense? It's pretty tried and true over the years. Sure, the passing will bring people into the seats, but it's rare that if you don't do those fundamental things well, you won't be a good football team. Well, the Giants are dead last in the NFL in a stat that we like to use here, an advanced metric called yards per play. So not yards in a game, not anything else, but break down each and every play. How many yards are they amassing, and how many are they giving up per play? And the Giants on defense are dead last in yards per play. That's not good. And a lot of Seattle's problems really can come down to 2 points. One, they've played one of the tougher schedules in the league the first half of the season. Well, moving forward, starting with this game, they've got the easiest schedule in the NFL the rest of the way. Easiest schedule. And the other problem is they've had lots of injuries. Last Sunday against the Raiders, talked about how they were teetering. They played with three backup offensive linemen, backups at safety, cornerback, linebacker, fullback, and tight end. So at some point, you're not even the Seattle Seahawks. You're just a bunch of guys filling in positions while the real guys come back at some point.
Yeah.
So the Seahawks will get them at some point. And, you know, the only question here is bettors, do you still want to lay all those points? And even after having said all that, I'm not sure I want to do that, Dave.
No, nine looks a lot. And you mentioned the injuries there. It's important to note that the Giants have suffered similar fate in terms of injuries as well. We're at that time of the season, aren't we, Gil, where if things are going badly, reporters for any franchise at the moment are quickly pinpointing those injuries as statements for why a team are underperforming. And many people looking at the Giants, they've lost Rashard Jennings. He looks like he's going to be out again. Victor Cruz, of course, out for the season. And Prince Amukamara is lost at cornerback now as well. So the Giants have suffered as well in terms of injuries this season.
Yeah, John Beeson, the linebacker that they picked up, they had high hopes for to be their great middle linebacker. He barely played for the Giants this year before he was done for the season as well. Usually on the Megapod that I do, I spend the time in between my guests talking, sort of throwing out advanced metrics that are interesting and you might not find elsewhere. Well, yesterday on the show, talking about the two primetime games, I just basically was reading injury reports. and we as fans, we tend to sort of overlook it. You know, we just, another guy's in the uniform, so, you know, it's still that team. Well, yeah, it matters after a while. I mean, some injuries really, really matter. And the question is, as handicappers, we got to figure out which ones do. And I think in the Giants' case, yeah, you make a great point. It's equally hampered. Unfortunately for them, they're not getting a lot of those guys back.
No, precisely. And I like that you mentioned the O-line as well for the Seahawks, because Russell Wilson, under duress, on 37% of his dropbacks this season, tied for most in the NFL. It's a good job he's a mobile quarterback, Gil.
Yeah, and, as a Redskin fan who was witness to Robert Griffin III getting a lot of criticism for, you know, not knowing how to not take a hit. He doesn't slide as well as Russell Wilson. Well, we'll see if Russell Wilson can slide as effectively when he's under duress all the time, mobile or not. But you're right, he struggled against Oakland last week. 48.6 completion percentage, a 42.1 QBR score. Again, anything under 50 is not that great. And that really resembled the way he looked when they lost to the Cardinals at home last season. So the Seahawks do have this thing where they can, every once in a while, maybe more so this year than last for sure, look pretty ordinary. And then they've got all that off-field stuff. It's tough to repeat as Super Bowl champions. I mean, and the Seahawks were stacked up the best of any recent Super Bowl champion to repeat because they were a young team that stayed intact. Well, even they are having difficulties here mid-season. The book hasn't been written. Like I said, easy schedule moving forward. But I don't know about laying all those points here on Sunday. it's funny how they're doing just enough to win in most cases, but covering is an entirely different matter. And even against a banged-up Giants team, I could end up looking stupid here, and the Seahawks could win by 30, but it's not a game I'm willing to lay all those points on.
So it's a no bet in that one, Gil, as far as the spread is concerned.
Gil. I will add, I'm sorry, Dave, I will add that a couple guests on my show love the Giants getting the points. I would not be in that group.
Let's have a look at the Bears. The Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers. This is Monday, 1:30 a.m. UK time. A crucial game in the NFC North, this one. The Bears 11-4 on the money line. The Packers in the betting at 2-7. The Chicago Bears plus the 7 points. The Green Bay Packers minus the 7 points with the extra juice. And the Packers currently second behind Detroit in the NFC North at 5-3. And Chicago last in the division, but only at 3-5. So as is evident from those numbers, pretty tight. And this match, Gil, is a vital one. Currently sitting at a touchdown in the favour of the Packers. That's understandable as well. Both these teams enter off a bye in week 9. But before that, the Bears beaten by Miami and New England comprehensively. And even though the Packers couldn't get a result in New Orleans, prior to that, they had won 4 straight.
Yeah, didn't we make a blood pact on this show about a month ago never to bet on the Bears again?
I think we did.
I don't know that we should break that here. This is the 190th meeting between these two franchises. That's the oldest rivalry in the NFL. So for all the other talk about other rivalries, this really is the granddaddy of them all. And we talked about injuries. Well, injuries are everywhere here. The Packers are hoping to get a couple of their offensive linemen back, guards Josh Sitton and T.J. Lang. That would do nothing but enhance Aaron Rodgers' already phenomenal stretch here as a quarterback. And the Bears, on the other hand, they could get back their linebacker Lance Briggs. They're hoping so. Their cornerback and first-round draft pick Kyle Fuller could be back. Chris Conte could be back after having a concussion. But it doesn't look like the Bears will have their defensive end Lamar Houston, which is a big deal. They won't have him for the rest of the season. Dave, after he ruptured a knee ligament while celebrating a sack of the Patriots' backup quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Not only literally insults to injury.
Unbelievable.
Comical way to, and sad way to lose your season, especially in a game you had no chance of winning at that point. They will get Jared Allen back on defense as well. Anyway, all of that to say, Jay Cutler, lifetime, 1-9 against the Packers, straight up, in the regular season. 13 touchdown passes, but 19 interceptions. By the way, the only one win in that 1-9 record was last year when Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone on the game's opening drive. So really, Jay Cutler up against Aaron Rodgers is winless. He's never won. And I don't know that I'd want to put anybody's hard-earned money, not only my own, but anybody else's that I know, behind the Chicago Bears. Now, is Jay Cutler capable of coming out and just having a gangbusters game like he did, the opening week against the Niners? Absolutely. But I'm not betting on this dude.
No. 12 turnovers this season. That's led to 44 points against, in terms of 44 points conceded against their opponents on those 12 turnovers. That's not good. That's not good, Gil. And Jay Cutler has struggled. Good bye week for Aaron Rodgers as well, because he had a hamstring tweak against New Orleans, so probably needed that extra rest. And when the Packers went to Soldier Field in week 4, the Bears just couldn't stop Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson. I'm not sure how they're going to do it this time, Gil.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's no reason to believe, there's nothing to suggest that they would. The Bears, I mentioned the Giants were dead last in opposing our opponent's yards per play. Well, the Bears are knocking at the door. They're giving up 6.0 yards per play. It's a very simple stat, just simply says your opponent, on any given play, on average, that's what they gain. Well, it takes only 10 yards to get a first down. I've done the math for us. And so 6 per play is pretty bad to give up. And yeah, when it's this thing with Cutler too. And again, this is nothing scientific, but it seems like when he gets in a matchup straight up with Aaron Rodgers, that he tries to compete you know, quote unquote, with Aaron Rodgers. Not they're on the field at the same time. And Jay Cutler isn't going to beat Aaron Rodgers at Aaron Rodgers' game. And he's a, you know, your friend said a pick six machine. Well, Jay Cutler's just a straight up pick machine in those cases when he's trying to throw the ball around the yard. Again, though, 7 points, right? You know, it's a touchdown, and that's a lot of points in a game, or maybe 7.5 in some cases. It's a lot of points in a division game. That's the thing. The NFL is a funny thing. You can cite all these stats, and you look at it on paper, and then stuff happens on Sunday that is sort of inexplicable, and division games like this aren't typically 7.5-point spreads. Yet they are here because of what everything we just mentioned. This is the highest total of the week as well in the NFL at 53.5. So the 7.5 is somewhat correlated and justified in that regard. Do I want to lay 7.5? Not so easily, quite frankly.
We're laying 7 here in the UK. The Packers minus the 7 with the extra juice at 20-23. If you're looking at positives for the Bears, they might be able to get the run game going against this Green Bay Packers unit, Gil.
Yes. I mean, that would be the key to their win, right? If they could get Matt Forte going, and that's really the key to a lot of Bears games, but specifically, you're right, against a defense here in the Packers that might be susceptible to the run. If Chicago can get Forte going, you know, the dominoes fall into place. It takes pressure off Cutler. Less yards on third downs to convert. The snowball, if you will, is in effect. Mixing metaphors there. But Chicago, that would be the key. You know, but prime time, Green Bay, Sunday night, under the lights, that could work either way.
So with the Packers, Gil, but not sure about giving up the 7?
Yeah, I'd lean Packers. I certainly wouldn't put my money on the Bears. I'd lean Packers. Might, you know, I have, you know, I do 5 Super Contest picks. I've already selected 4. I'm debating who my 5th is going to be. The Packers are in that debate for me.
We'll talk more about that at the end of the podcast, Gil. Let's look at the Monday night game, the early Tuesday morning game, UK time. The Carolina Panthers at the Philadelphia Eagles. The Panthers 5-2 on the money line. The Eagles in the betting at 1-3. The Panthers plus 6.5 points, 20-21. The Eagles with extra juice, minus 6.5 points at 20-23. The Panthers, they're a game behind, or half a game behind New Orleans in the NFC South, sitting at 3-5-1. The Eagles atop the NFC East, they're at 6-2. And Mark Sanchez back in prime time. At the helm for the Eagles after 4 tumultuous seasons starting for the Jets, Gil. Got his first taste of the action last week when steering the Eagles to a 31-21 win against the Texans. He's back, Mark Sanchez.
He's back, as we like to call him, the Sanchez.
Fantastic.
He's interesting because he's one of these guys that has looked miserable as a pro, famously the butt fumble, the iconic play of his career on Thanksgiving against the Patriots. But, you know, not too shabby when you look at his career record, 37-31. He was at the helm for some good playoff Jets teams early in his career, 77 touchdowns against 72 picks. Not gangbusters, but not horrible. You know, it's funny, I like the Eagles here. I got them earlier in the week at 6 and then again at 6.5. It's teetering up to 7 now. And I probably, you know, the reason I grabbed the Eagles early is because I kind of knew that was going to happen. He'll probably stay at 7 by game time. A couple guys on my show love the Panthers. And again, this is sort of NFL logic. I'm a numbers guy. They're a, you know, they use different logic to come up with their assessment of the game. And their logic is simply, in a nutshell, the fact that when a backup quarterback typically comes into a game, everyone's talking about how that's going to be a detriment to the team. Well, in this case, they are alarmed by the fact that everyone thinks that having Mark Sanchez in is actually not a downgrade for the Eagles, and that this spread should not be as high as it is. I don't quite see it that way because I think the Eagles are a system team, and that Nick Foles, out with a broken clavicle now for at least 6 weeks, going to Mark Sanchez isn't the worst thing in the world. I actually think Mark Sanchez fits great into this offensive system. He's a mobile quarterback. Is he accurate? No, he's not. I'll give you that. You know, I'm not gonna beat around the bush. But I think this works for Mark Sanchez, and I actually like the Eagles here. I like them better below 7, don't get me wrong, but I lean Eagles here. They've won 8 straight regular season home games, and I think they win and cover here.
It's minus 6.5 currently. Is Foles accurate, Gil?
Well, he was last year. Not at all this year.
No.
So that's a very good point.
Sanchez is a better mover, as you've just referenced there. I get the feeling Chip Kelly might run a more balanced offense with Mark Sanchez under center. We saw that in the Houston game to a certain extent. LeSean McCoy was more involved once Nick Foles got injured.
Yeah, and LeSean McCoy, you know, we can talk all we want about Foles to Sanchez, but you may have hit on the key of it all, right? LeSean McCoy is the man. He wasn't earlier this year, but he's really rounding back into form. He's got 5.3 yards per carry over his last 3 games following that slow start. 5.3 yards per carry is great. And the Panthers on defense are a unmitigated disaster. Mm-hmm. They've allowed 30.7 points per game since week 3. That's second to last in the National Football League. And over that stretch, they're 1-5-1. That does not bode well against LeSean McCoy. The Panthers, if we want to use an advanced stat called defensive expected points added, and I get this from Mike Sando at ESPN, who is a real genius statistician over there on the NFL, no team has dropped off in defensive expected points added more than the Panthers have from last year to this year. They were plus 4.35 in 2013. They're minus 8.22 in expected points added. That's if you break down every single play, what the Panthers defense, how the Panthers defense performs versus the rest of the league, or how the rest of the league does historically, given the same situations over, you know, mounds of data. So there are huge drop-off, and a lot of that has to do with Greg Hardy not playing for the Panthers. Greg Hardy not allowed to play because of domestic violence issues. We'll leave it at that, facing him. But they're a disaster. They're not stopping anybody, and I don't see, Sanchez or not, how they're going to stop the Eagles at all.
One statistic that stands out to me here, Gil, I'm glad you mentioned Greg Hardy as well, because it's incredible to believe that this franchise was 12-4 last year, and they've dropped to 3-5-1, having won their opening couple of games this season, I believe, as well. The Eagles have a league worst 21 turnovers this season. I can't believe this team are 6-2 with that many turnovers. That's incredible, isn't it?
It is incredible. It does speak to the quickness, though, with which they have possessions. You know, the Eagles, funny, time of possession, a stat that a lot of people rely on in football, college and pro, doesn't really apply to the Eagles, right? If they're scoring quickly, what does it matter how long they have the ball? Turnovers, in some weird way, might, and I haven't done a full study on this, but it might not matter as much with the Eagles either if they're turning the ball over and yet scoring with a briskness as well. I'm sort of talking before I have the evidence to suggest that necessarily that it is the case. But it is interesting with the Eagles how certain NFL stats just we have to sort of rethink. It's never a good idea to turn the ball over, and they're certainly going to have to be more protective with the football. But, you know, the Panthers, you talk about 12-4 last year, Dave. The only issue with the Panthers 12-4 last season is that they won a sort of outlying number of very close football games. And whenever that happens, you wonder if the 12-4 is more of a paper tiger than legit. And I think we have some evidence to suggest that it might not have been completely legit last year. Of course, you know, they lost Steve Smith Sr. On offense, and that has been huge. Huge loss for the Panthers. I don't think they've fully recovered for that. Their running backs are constantly hurt, D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. The big hope here for the Panthers in this game is that they get back all or some of Brian Bell, Amini Silatulo, or Trey Turner on the offensive line. They were not in against the Saints. If those guys can get back, Cam Newton's got a shot here.
At the Eagles, -6.5 points, the pick. Now, as ever, to finish off the podcast, we'll get the lock of the week, the shock of the weekend. As you mentioned, four of the five Super Contest picks, Gil. We'll start with the best bet this week.
I like the Detroit Lions over the Miami Dolphins, Dave. Detroit giving up 2.5 points, as I look across the board right now in Las Vegas, to the Dolphins. Will this get to 3 is the question. And thus far, while it's 2.5 and a little extra juice, it has not gotten back to 3. So I love Detroit here. Miami's been phenomenal. They're on a 3-game winning streak. They rank first in the NFL in QBR allowed, just 31.4 for opposing quarterbacks. That's up from 10th in the league over the final 8 games last season for the Dolphins. They're number one in opponents' yards per play. So Miami's been fabulous on defense. They shut out the Chargers last week, 37-0, in a game that is just, you just shake your head and you're like, what was that? But, the big but, Detroit coming off a bye. As you know, their last game was at Wembley, where they came way back on the Falcons to win that game. And the big thing is they're getting Calvin Johnson back, Dave. And it cannot be stressed enough how huge that is. Johnson hasn't played since week 5 with the ankle injury. Even before that, he was really diminished for a few weeks, was just sort of out there as a decoy. You get him back, Reggie Bush perhaps as well here, and Detroit is a really phenomenal offensive team. Their defense has been great all season. I like Detroit here at home. And the other thing is scheduling is big in the NFL. Miami's got a Thursday night game 4 days later against the Buffalo Bills, a division opponent, which is a huge deal for them. I think there's a bit of natural overlook here against the Lions, who are an NFC team. So that helps as well. I like the Lions, my lock of the week.
I like it. 2.5, -2.5, 20-23. What's the shock of the week, Gil?
Shock of the week, always a debate. And I say this with a chest here flexing, but I'm going to the San Francisco 49ers. I say it with a bit of breath holding, but I'm taking the Niners here as underdogs at New Orleans, going into the Superdome. Tough, tough place to play. New Orleans doesn't lose there, but I'm catching 5.5 points. Let me check what it is right now.
Yeah, we've got 5.5, Gil.
Yeah, even some sixes out there. I tell you, if I get 6, it's absolutely a huge play. But even at 5.5, I like the Niners here. As I mentioned on the show last week, and this is before the Niners lost to the Rams. And again, if you ask any Niners fan, they didn't lose to the Rams. they scored a couple touchdowns on that last drive, but it didn't work out for the Niners. But they lose outright at home to the Rams, and another shocker. I think the Niners are the most underrated team currently in the NFL. And, you know, people could say, well, Gil, what are you talking about? They have all these injuries. Their coach is a mess. Yeah, but, you know, all it takes is 1 week, and everyone's changing their tune. And I put my futures bet in on the Niners, not only before last week's game, but also after, at even better odds. I like the Niners here catching 5.5. Colin Kaepernick takes over here. That Saints defense is not going to be able to contain him. Give me the Niners getting 5.5 points, maybe against any team in the NFL, with perhaps the exception of an at Denver game, because we saw what Denver did to them earlier in the year with the injuries. But I love the Niners here.
I like it. The Niners, despite what happened last week, +5.5 points at the New Orleans Saints. What's happening with Jim Harbaugh at the moment? Is there a latest update, Gil? Is he still safe till the end of the season at the very least?
Yeah, I think it remains the same. Safe till the end of the season. A virtual lock not to be in San Francisco next year, which, again, given his record, is astounding. You know, that you would be so so displeased with a working relationship with a guy who has been that successful. But he's probably a horse's ass, Dave. Am I allowed to say that on your show?
That's allowed, Gil.
Yeah, Yeah, I think he's probably a horrible person. He's really intense and sort of bizarrely so, and that's not going to work out for people. You know, people have to work alongside you day after day. We're human beings in the end, and, you know, if he's not winning Super Bowls, it doesn't matter how successful he is. It's sort of like, well, great record, buddy, but we can still get rid of you. As long as you're not winning Super Bowls, you're still not bigger than the franchise at that point, and they'll get rid of you.
I was just going to say, what would be next for Jim Harbaugh? I've seen a lot of pontificating in the press about his next possible head coaching job. Many people suggesting that the Jets could be a fit for him, maybe.
The Jets could be. You know, a lot of people say the Oakland Raiders, right? The Oakland Raiders are right across the bay in San Francisco, you know, right across the San Francisco Bay. It'd be a short, he wouldn't even have to move. You know, I think he lives in Palo Alto. Be a bit longer of a commute for him, but he wouldn't have to change his address. That would be a logical choice as well. I don't know if you know this, but Oakland's 0-8. So they're going to be probably looking around. I don't know if Tony Sperano is going to be their coach beyond this season. The real chalk, though, the favorite for Harbaugh will be at the University of Michigan. You know, that's where he went to school, and big ties, that's a very plum college job. If things don't turn out well down the stretch here for the University of Michigan in the college football season, that might be a destination for Jim Harbaugh. Boy, I could see him as a college coach with that attitude for sure.
Absolutely, and it's completely different from the way our sports work in this country because we've got university teams, Gil, but nothing like the college teams that you've got over there, and nothing like the coverage either. It's just seen as a way to do extracurricular activity while you're studying for a degree over here, but over there it's really intense and properly supported as well, Gil.
Oh, supported beyond belief, and it's big, big business. I mean, football, American college football, really sort of dictates the rest of collegiate sport at universities in terms of budgeting and, you know, it's priority. It is king. Football is king in the United States, not only at a pro level, but really through the economics of college sports and in academia, quite frankly, it drives a lot. So it can't be overemphasized what college football is in this country on so many levels.
Superb. Let's finish with the super contest picks then, Gil. For people just joining us for the first time, Gil's in a super contest in Las Vegas and five picks a week on the spread, Gil. I'm taking it the Lions and the Niners are two of those.
They are, the Lions and the Niners. I also like the Eagles. I did throw the Eagles in. And it has to be stated that with a super contest, the lines get frozen midweek. So whatever happens after Wednesday doesn't really affect our picks.
Ah.
We sort of get frozen in time. So I have the Eagles, for instance, I believe it was at -6. The fourth pick, the Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens are my fourth pick. I have it at -9, not at its current -10, I believe it is right now.
That's so, correct.
Yeah, so that's important to note when you make these picks. So Detroit, San Francisco, the Eagles, again at 6, Baltimore at 9. Those are my first four, and I'm debating on my fifth. You know, I'm debating, is it going to be the Packers? I don't really feel comfortable laying all those points, even given all that we said about them. Maybe Dallas, maybe the London game, but I'll have to, you know, the problem is I got to put that pick in today. I won't know if Romo's playing or not, so that's a sort of dicey one. So not really sure what my fifth pick is going to be. I will tell you that folks on my show, they were huge supporters moving into this week in terms of their bets of the New York Jets.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, I can't get behind that, Dave. I've made that mistake already. I can't do that.
Ben Roethlisberger's just been incredible, hasn't he, the last 2 weeks? I suppose they are the guests on your podcast thinking there's going to be some sort of regression to the mean there with Roethlisberger, perhaps?
Yeah, they make their picks through a combination of smoke, mirrors, magic potion. They're really good at that, and one of the things that they talk about is buying low and selling high, and their point is the perception of Pittsburgh, correctly by the way, they're correct when they say this, perception of Pittsburgh has never been higher.
Yep.
The perception of the Jets has never been lower. You know, the only problem is I joked about myself a couple weeks ago when I picked the Jets against who was it where the Jets just got crushed? Buffalo, right? And I loved the Jets in that situation. They were at home. I think they were 1-6 at the time or whatever their record was. It just was like Buffalo was banged up on their front line. The Jets had everything going for them. And then they just go out there and they just get crushed. And the whole time I'm saying to my buddy who I'm watching the game with, I'm like, yep, I bet on the Jets, my friend. I bet on the Jets. And he's just laughing at me. I'm just not going to put myself in that position again. There's nothing about the Jets. Here's what they said, though. Marco D'Angelo, who is one of the guests on my show, he said, if the Jets don't win this game, they're losing every other game the rest of the season. So this is set up. And he's a Pittsburgh guy. He's born and raised in Pittsburgh. He loves the Steelers. And he's picking the Jets. So, you know, that is something when someone who's a fan or someone who's an avid watcher of a team goes against that team. We saw it last Monday night. My guest, Anita Marks, is a reporter for the New York Giants, and she said, oh, bet the house on the Colts. And she was right. Mm-hmm. You know, the Colts just went crazy on them. So in this case, we have a guy from Pittsburgh saying, I don't like the Steelers here giving up 4.5 points. Is it going to be one of my Super Contest picks? Heck no. No way.
Gil, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you on this Friday. Enjoy the NFL weekend, and we'll speak again soon. Really enjoyable. Thank you, Gil.
Dave, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.